full-time occupation. When we read about Daksha having 10,000 sons, it's just like inconceivable. How many nurses were there? 10 million. Okay, so we're going to spend some time this morning discussing the topic, well, reviewing the prayers that are being offered by Chitraketu. Review the whole topic of the canto. The topic of the canto, at the beginning of the canto, Prabhupada identified it as occupational duties for mankind. So, these verses that we'll discuss this morning, they're reviewing the occupational duties found in the Bhagavat Dharma system, and then some contrasting of the duties found with other types of conceptions. Now, what we heard last night, I hope we heard it last night, was among the many things that Chitraketu offered in prayers to the Lord was the absolute nature of the Lord and also the absolute nature of the Bhagavad Dharma process that links one with the Lord. So while we're spending time speaking about the Bhagavad Dharma process, please bear in mind, and I'll remind you, that Chitraketu is glorifying the Lord by glorifying that process which connects one with the Lord. Because there's no way of knowing Him otherwise. Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. Through the process of bhakti yoga, one can understand Him and not otherwise. This Bhagavad Dharma process is the means of knowing the Lord, going way back to the beginning of the canto. Similarly, by the Bhagavad Dharma process, those things that keep us bound to material existence, that is apparently separated from the Lord, at least in consciousness separated from the Lord, misconception of consciousness, misconception of self-identity, that we're separate from the Lord, that consciousness is eradicated through Bhagavad Dharma and not by other processes. We're going to hear some of this compare and contrast business. So when the lights came on last night, I read this sentence. Right in the middle of the sentence. Oh, unconquerable one, when you spoke about Bhagavad Dharma, which is the uncontaminated religious system for achieving shelter of your lotus feet, then the lights came on. That was your victory. And persons like the Kumaras who have no material desires, they're attracted to that form of, because it's pure, because there's no, those not attracted to anything material are attracted to Bhagavad Dharma. Remember we discussed the Atmarama verse. Shukadeva Goswami was attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam. Kumaras are attracted to Bhagavad Dharma. those that have no taste, no, there's nothing in their hearts towards something material. This they find very attractive. It's still saying in other words, same thing. This is Paramahamsa literature. This is for transcendentalists. It's also for persons who are victims of Kali Yuga. So we can be included. But for our information, those that are beyond the influences of Kali Yuga, beyond the influences of modes of nature, beyond the attraction of anything material, this has a big spectrum of interest. On the topmost end, transcendentalists are interested. Because it doesn't promise something material, it provides shelter at the Lord's lotus feet. Chitraketu also had come to that stage. We'll see as, well, we won't see today, but we'll see as the chapter unfolds, or the whole pastime with Chitraketu unfolds. He was in that position. It's already been shown. He's in Vidyadhara Loka. He has opulences like anything, and he's not attracted. He sees the Supreme Personality and Godhead, and the feature of attraction for him is his form and the process of linking with him. So, now is the contrast side, starting with text 41. Being full of contradictions, all forms of religion except Bhagavad Dharma work under conceptions of fruitive results and distinctions of you and I and yours and mine. So fruitive, this is karma and jnana. The statement is, Bhagavad Dharma is unmixed with karma and jnana. Is that familiar? Anyabhilasha dushunyam, jnana karma janavratam. Sounds familiar? So, here's some scriptural basis for that statement made by Rupa Goswami. Fruitive activities is easier to understand that particular contamination. More people, or let's say it's more subtle, and therefore it's perhaps a little less discernible where mental speculation comes in as a contamination. Because when people start really getting up there with lofty ideas, someone way down here looks up at them and goes, wow, they're really high. What Chitraketu is indicating, there are specific indicators. There's like little litmus tests that indicate this is contamination. Such contaminations as you and I and yours and mine, or you and I. Where religious teachings explicitly indicate a divisions between people. On a fundamental level, I'll give an example. I didn't grow up in Jewish faith, but I came to know after some time, even when persons who are, well, the Jewish teaching is, even so those who are Jewish and they may have friends that are not Jewish, they may make social relationships with other people, but there's always the distinction that there are two kinds of souls. There's a Jewish soul and there's everybody else. And there's words in Hebrew that indicate the Jewish soul, that indicates they're the chosen ones because it's there in the Old Testament. and then there's all other souls. So persons can become Jewish by faith, but they're never Jewish souls. They're the chosen ones. That's their understanding. That's an example of you and me. Eternally, there's Jewish souls and there's other souls. There's another example of that. Some religions, who also have an idea of there's a soul, have an idea that there are souls according to species of life. There's animal souls. In fact, there's dog souls, cat souls, and rabbit souls, and horse souls. And there are souls according to species of life. That's why there's species of life. There's different souls. And then there's bird souls, and there's human souls, and there's fish souls. A little complicated. But there's me, and then there's you. Not just on the temporal platform, but on the platform of the soul. Once you're human, you're always human. Even if you do lower than human things, you're always human because you're a human soul. I can go on giving, I'll give one more example. Just heard Prabhupada express this one yesterday, at least half of it. In the Bible, in the Old Testament, there's a statement that says, dust thou art, dust thou beest. So some persons take that in the literal sense, that's who you are. So those are the people that have the religious idea that when there's a second coming of Christ, all those Christians who are buried in Christian graves are going to rise from the dead in those dust bodies, and they're going to have a big festival. I don't know what it's going to look like, or what they think it's going to look like, but they'll rise from the dead, and they'll be with their families once again, and it's going to be heaven. Heaven on earth with Christ kind of like the in charge of the heavenly activities. But that's their idea. I don't exactly understand the idea. But then there's our family, and then there's everybody else and their family, and so I'll jump ahead for a second, come back to this one. Inherent in that, in those conceptions, it's not explicit, it's implicit. There's envy. There's my family, what my family has and is. And that conception is built into it as envy. Then, because there's other families, or there's other people or other groups. And what happens when there's other people and other groups? There's some harmony, but there's also some disharmony. And the basis of that disharmony is you have something that I want, and I have something that you want. And so there's envy. There's lots of examples of that. Palestine and Israel, one example, over a tract of land. It's our holy land, no, it's our holy land, no, it's our holy land, no, it's our holy land. We're holier than you, no, we're holier than you, no, we're holier than you. As soon as there's a concept that's like that, it's a flag. Here's envy, and there's a problem. It's not, because the concept is not pure, the behavior is going to be not pure. The application of that understanding. Clear? So now here's the, on the other side is the Bhagavad Dharma. platform, the followers of Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Dharma have no such consciousness. They're all Krishna conscious, thinking that they are Krishna's and Krishna is theirs. That means from any position people can be taking up Bhagavad Dharma. They can take up Bhagavad Dharma in the form of the particular expression of Bhagavad Dharma that we're exercising, or another form, or another form, or another form, or another form, or another form. The form is not the essence. The essence is the essence. So, some may wear their tilak this way, some may wear their dhoti that way, some may worship this way, some may chant mantras that way, but always in the mantras there's names of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, and the fundamental ingredients are there. And therefore, there's harmony, there's not disharmony. The attempt that Prabhupada made when interacting with people of other faith, his program was not to get them to come, there's a big fence over here, and you should come over from your side of the fence to our side of the fence because the grass is greener. There's better pastures over here, this is a better religion, you should give up that one and take this one. He never spoke like that. Never once spoke like that. There's two things that he did. One is he encouraged people to follow nicely that which they've been given. He also, the gate was open. If people understood that this, not only the teaching is pure, the practice of the teaching is pure, you're welcome to participate. The gate's open. The gate's open in the other direction, too. This name of Krishna is all attractive. The gate's open. You can chant this name of Krishna, whatever your religion is. Whatever your belief system, way of worship, how you wear your dhoti, that Krishna's holy name is accessible. That's what Bhagavad Dharma is. So, he goes on, Chitraketu. There are other low-class religious systems which are contemplated for the killing of enemies. Even within the Vedic text, just like these mantras chanted by Tvashta, specifically it was to create an enemy that would kill Indra. There are mantras within the Vedic system that are for retaliation against one's enemy. There's a section that's all about that stuff. And it's exercised by people when there's this exercise for two purposes. One is an envious purpose, and another is a just purpose. Like, for example, when Vena was placed as the king, the Brahmanas did it, the Brahmanas had to undo it. So they used those same section of the Vedic mantras to kill Vena, because there was nobody else that could. He was too powerful, and they had put him there. They took that responsibility. They didn't use weapons, they used mantras. But the purpose is different for establishing protection, whether it's done by Arjuna or a religious Kshatriya, or whether done by a Brahmana, which normally isn't done, but at least it's there. The consciousness behind the act is not what's being described here. Contemplating for the purpose of killing enemies, or for the gaining of mystic power. Again, that's a manifestation of envy. Somebody has something, I want that something, and I do so I can get that something. Two. Born of envy. But such religious systems, being full of passion and envy, are impure and temporary. My religion, your religion, Prabhupada speaks in the purport. How often do we run into this? I don't know how often you run into it. I run into it a lot. My religion, your religion. Why did you give up your religion to take this one? I hear that all the time. And my answer is, I didn't. I mean, you didn't. Look at you. You said, but this is my religion. What is the meaning of religion? And so, nice discussion. They don't understand. They think this guy not only gave up his religion, he's goofy. Or they, some understand the message. But many people take religion, as Prabhupada speaks about, it's not a new one, new idea. Religion is taken to be a belief system. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu encountered that in his talks with Shankazi. But belief systems, people give up all the time. When I was young, I believed something. I got older, I believed something else. I meet another group of people, I believe another set of somethings. So does that mean I just changed my religion? And that's what religion is constituted of, is a belief system. That breeds envy. My group, your group. Or my belief, your belief, individual to individual. Rather, what is the essence? The essence is the intrinsic nature of the soul. What's the intrinsic nature of the soul? That's what religion is. Serving God. All souls are serving. Ultimately, all souls are serving God. Knowingly or unknowingly, we're all serving. And we're serving, ultimately, we're serving God. Bhagavad Dharma is acting in that position of serving God. That's what Bhagavad Dharma is. It's the essence. Some people don't like to hear it expressed this way, but it's the science of religion. And then you can dress the science of religion this way, or this way, and this way. Put different rituals on it and put different belief systems on it. But really what's at the heart or the essence is Bhagavad Dharma. We don't have to convert people. We have to bring people's intelligence to bear on the essence. And then, when that's done, they can dress the essence this way or that way or another way. Fine. We've achieved our purpose. If people can capture the essence. You get the point. Prabhupada writes, systems of religion that do not concentrate upon service to the Supreme are temporary and cannot last long because they're full of envy. My belief, your belief. My belief's better than your belief. It's like two children having a quarrel over who's got the better toy. And after some time, they're no longer interested in the toy, but they're still carrying the mentality. They just are grown-up children. They're children with grown-up bodies, but they're still having children mentality. And religious expression is one of those. Mine is better than yours. That's not Bhagavad Dharma. A nice point. I'm reading on page 716, the bottom paragraph. Prabhupada quotes the Vedic injunction, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. That's a mystifying one. Impersonalists love it. Devotees love it too. King Chitraketu has already spoken it. You are the beginning, the middle, and the end of everything. That's Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. But he also says, that's the Abheda, now here's the Veda. The distinction is, because you are the source of everything and you are eternally existing, you have no beginning, middle, and end. Although you are the beginning, middle, and end of everything. If one doesn't understand the Chinta Beta Beta Tattva, that's mumbo jumbo. It's something that just doesn't connect. It's not mumbo jumbo, it's very clear. The Lord is distinct from all things that are created. Those things that are created come from Him, and therefore He is within all things. Those first verses of the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He is within all things, and yet He is outside of all things. Materially speaking, that's a contradiction. We're in the room, and we're outside of the room. Well, make up your mind. We're in the room, or we're outside of the room, but how can we be both at the same time? Krishna is both at the same time. It's not because He moves real fast between two rooms. It's an understanding of the relationship of His energies, which means the cosmic manifestation, the totality of everything created. It's but His energies, and His energies rest in Him. So everything is in Him, but He is outside of everything. He has His own separate existence. So Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma is expressing that Brahman, the Supreme, is present in everything. And therefore, how can we say that everything is false? Those very same people that like Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma also like to say that that part of which is everything doesn't exist. It's false. Jagat Mithya. That part is false. There's contradiction. Then that's a very basic one. There's three or four that are really, really basic contradictions. If you can understand them clearly, even intellectually, you can meet any impersonalist and watch them run around in circles. And the thing is, sometimes they recognize they're running around in circles, but for the most part, they're just so accustomed to it, they just run around in circles. Here's another one. You got the first one? The next one is, if all there is Brahman, and the jagat is false, then how does, and that means that I'm also Brahman, right? Because I also exist. Then how did I forget that I'm Brahman? Well, you became covered. Where'd the covering come from? Watch this one. The covering actually doesn't exist. Well, then I should realize that I'm Brahman. But I'm not realizing that I'm Brahman. So why is that? Because you're covered. Where'd the covering come from? Well, the covering doesn't really exist. How did Brahman... Another way of saying the same thing is, how does Brahman become covered? That's the doctrine. Vivarta. Vad. Brahman becomes covered. Actually, we're Brahman. I am God and you're God. Om Namo Narayanaya. We're all God. We just take sannyas. We're God. Pretty simple. But actually, we're all God. Why is it we've forgotten that we're God? You're covered. Where'd the covering come from? Actually, there's no covering. It's false. I could do it again a few more times, but I think you get the ideas. They have no answer for that question. Because it's a very attractive, at least, you know, attractive for those who want to become God, it's an attractive philosophy. You are God. You just have to realize that you're God. Why don't I realize that I'm God? Because you're covered. Where'd the covering come from if I'm God? Well, it doesn't exist. You just have to realize that it doesn't exist, then you're God. Or jugglery. I watch these people in New York. They have people that they do the shell game. And they talk real fast and they put some cups upside down on top of a table. They put an object under the table, under the cup, and then move the cups around real fast. And then, you know, if you can guess which cup, under which cup the object is, you win the jackpot. So then they're really just sleazy people. One guy comes up, he's got a table. There's another guy that comes up and holds the money in his hand. There's a third guy watching for the police. The police come along, the table folds up, and they're off. And people know it because they see it every day, but then they still come around and watch the guy, where's the pea, moves it around, or where's the coin, or where's the object. And then some guy says, I think it's over there, and hey, you win! And he gets a bunch of money. Now, I want to bet again. And the guy that's doing it, he manages, so pulls some other money. And just cheating people. Whatever their system, I don't know, but, you know, they just, at some point, the thing disappears. And then they take the people's money, and they're off. This is, you know, take your intelligence, take your life. Where's Brahman? Where's Brahman? Watch the cups moving around. Where's Brahman? There's no Brahman. Take away all the cups. It's hollow. Nothing. There's no substance. Because it's a misapplication of sarvam kalvidam Brahman. One needs to understand the inseparable nature, it's right in the verse, but the inseparable nature of that which comes from God and the energetic source. But they will want to say there's no energies, because as soon as you have energetic and energies, you have two, and our fundamental assumption is it's all one. So we can't have that there's two, it's just one thing. Brahman. But it's there. Brahman also is there within that which comes from Brahman. As Prabhupada would say, that they do not know. So, there are various religious systems. King Chitraketu is appreciating, he's glorifying the Bhagavad Dharma system, which is the topic of the canto. Now he's going to discuss the next verse is discussing the nature of the the envious element that's within these other systems. Envy means envy of the Supreme Lord. If we're envious of others, behind that one is envious of the Supreme Lord, because others are but a manifestation of the Supreme Lord. They themselves, or whatever it is that they have or are, is manifest from the energetic source. So between individuals, if there's some envy or material competition, is a manifestation of envy. You win means I lose. I win means you lose. And most of, just like, you know, the competition that's established in the educational system, which you're all very familiar with, it's based upon envy. I win means you lose. If somebody in the class gets an A, that's one less chance for me to get an A. There may be many A's, but there's only a certain number of A's. Some other people have to be less. So it breeds. And then those people that are good at getting A's, they become proud, but they also become envious of those who might take their position, just like Indra. He's after my position. He's doing so well, I have to undermine him. Hello? Hare Krishna. So, and religious systems have that built into them also. How can a religious system that produces envy of oneself and of others be beneficial for oneself or for others? What is auspicious about following such a system? What is actually to be gained? By causing pain to one's own self due to self-envy, and by causing pain to others, one only arouses anger, your anger, and practices irreligion. So I gave some examples already. Prabhupada gives some other examples. He gives specifically examples of allowances within religion for animal sacrifice. Doesn't say animal slaughter, but animal sacrifice. But it breeds within the religious system that provides for that envy among men. If you can do that to an animal, then whoever is weaker, you can do that too. Or at least, you know, assert yourself in certain ways, like the asserting of removing your enemy, or minimizing the influence of even the whole concept. Like Prahlad says to his father, Hiranyakashipu, "Oh, I've heard about this concept of friend and enemy, but now I see it in you. You're thinking Vishnu is my enemy. He's your best friend, but you're thinking in a different way." Prabhupada quotes the divine and demoniac chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where the demoniac view is exactly what is being described by Chitraketu. And certainly some people adhere to that point of view. Perhaps some more blatantly than others, but even within religions that have large following in the world, there's built-in enviousness, like I've mentioned some of them. In the Christian faith, one of the strongest appeals of those who are pushing the Christian faith is, unless you become Christian, you'll burn in hell. So I'd like you to become a Christian because I don't want to see you burn in hell. But that's not really what... it's not compassion. It's like a gun in your ribs. That's their modus operandi. It's their mood. And it's very clearly in us and them. And Islamic religion, same. Not so much that the original teaching was like that, but it's been rendered like that. I could narrate, I won't take the time, to narrate experiences with persons that Christian and Islamic faith, when they didn't figure it out right away. I mean, certainly by the way I'm dressed, they know I'm not Muslim or Christian. But as they began to understand what it was that I was doing and representing, they became like animals. They, in some cases, literally attacked me. Just because my, quote, faith, my belief system wasn't their, quote, belief system. And it may be more gross, or it may be more subtle, but it's inbuilt, it's inbred, if the conceptions aren't so clear. The essence is service to God. So here's some statements that Prabhupada makes about what Bhagavad Dharma is. It comes in the purport of text 43. Here's Prabhupada's translation of the verse. He puts in Bhagavad Gita, although it's not in the verse, it's Bhagavad Dharma in the verse. My dear Lord, one's occupational duty is instructed in Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the title of the canto, Occupational Duties for Mankind. So the statement of Chitraketu is the occupational duties for mankind. It's stated in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita according to your point of view, which never deviates from the highest goal of life. Those who follow their occupational duties under your supervision, being equal to all living entities, moving and non-moving, are not considered high, and not considering high and low, are called Arians. Such Arians worship you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, there are statements that the Bhagavad Dharma is. So Bhagavad Dharma and Krishna Katha are identical. Bhagavad Dharma, he's already stated, means service to the Supreme Lord. Krishna Katha, what is that? What is the action of one who is serving the Supreme Lord? Bhagavad Dharma is Shravanam Kirtanam from the seventh canto. Prahlad's description of the nine processes of devotional service. Hearing and chanting about the Lord, that's Bhagavad Dharma. And wherever that is going on in any religious system, hearing and chanting about the Supreme Lord, that's Bhagavad Dharma. Bhagavad Dharma means, next paragraph, living according to the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what service is. There's an instruction. You live by that instruction. Which means two things. You do, and you connect with the person who is giving the instruction. Through the carrying out of the instruction, but it's not just... The distinction I'm making here is it's not just a mechanical execution. Do this, don't do that. But beyond is act in that relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Living is not just behaviors, it's consciousness. Rather the other way around. If your consciousness is in harmony with the Supreme, the doing is easy. It will just automatically follow. Do you see the distinction? There's vidhi, sadhana bhakti, where we're instructed to do this and don't do that. Vidhi Sadhana Bhakti is to bring us to a purified stage where spontaneously we're doing. The vidhis don't stop, but they're not the substance. The substance is the mood, the feeling of spontaneously, I want to please the Supreme Lord. And the vidhis are all automatically there. Because within the heart is, I want to please. And what form does that take? Same form as the vidhis describe. The essence of Bhagavad Dharma is not just a set of moralities. Do this, don't do that. The essence of Bhagavad Dharma is acting in your relationship with the Supreme Lord. Connecting in a mood of submission and love. That's Bhagavad Dharma. And whatever it is that awakens that, you can say that's religion. And conversely, if it doesn't awaken that, it's something else than religion. It's very simple. Then, Prabhupada says at the end of that second paragraph, therefore Bhagavad Dharma means Varnashram Dharma. Specifically, Daivi Varnashram Dharma, not just like Jarasandha, you observe respect for the brahmanas and you're practicing Bhagavad Dharma. But you do for the purpose of pleasing the Supreme Lord. Respect Brahminical culture because it's pleasing to the Supreme Lord, because namo brahmanya devaya go brahmana hitaya cha jagat hitaya krishnaya govindaya namo namaha. Because it's pleasing to Krishna. For that reason, I protect cows. I respect Brahminical culture. Because it's pleasing to Krishna. Not for achieving something temporary and worldly. The achieving of those things that we require, that's built into Bhagavad Dharma. Yoga Kshema Vahamyaham. So, I've been running late in my morning classes, and I'm going to not make the same mistake this morning. So, a little bit of an abrupt ending, but... So this is Bhagavad... Some principles of Bhagavad Dharma. It's so many stories have been told and so many personalities have been described and situations and unfolding dynamics. So, as the canto is closing, it's not finished yet, but we're getting there. More than three quarters finished. A nice summary of ecstatic. Remember, Chitraketu's position, he's experiencing transcendental ecstasy. Tears are pouring from his eyes and soaking the ground beneath the feet of Lord Anantadev. He was for some time unable to speak. It took a long time to compose himself. And these are the words that he's describing. So it's on the mark, very, very crisp and clear statements describing the glories of the Lord by describing the glories of the system of approaching the Lord, which he specifically provides. Dharmam hi sakshat bhagavat pranitam. That verse came stated by Yudhisthira Maharaj, that this Bhagavad Dharma is given by Bhagavan himself. It's the process of linking with him, with no interference, no static, no distraction. It's a very strong and clear connection. And through that medium one can understand Krishna. One can, like Chitraketu, meet him face to face. In fact, Bhagavad Dharma provides that opportunity regularly within its very practice. Or it provides the opportunity to become sufficiently purified to have that experience, depending upon one's... So it's merciful. Depending upon one's position of elevation, one gets the maximum opportunity to become purified up to the Paramahamsa stage. And no detours. Okay, so any discussion? Yeah.
Come on, I have two maybe interconnected points, questions. One is, even amongst Vaishnavas, there are the Sampradayas, and the followers of a particular Sampradaya are very attached to that Sampradaya.
Yeah.
It's definitely not based on a me and mine conception, but still there is. I mean, at least at the pure level, maybe amongst the neophytes there is, but...
That's someone may be attached to worshipping a particular form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Murari Gupta was attached to worshipping Ramchandra. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tested and then glorified Murari Gupta. Just see what a devotee he is. It was attached to a particular form of the Lord, or attached to a particular spiritual master. Doesn't mean, therefore, because I'm attached to a particular spiritual master, I disrespect other spiritual masters, or there's no room for respect. So that there's there's a materialistic kind of attachment, there's a immature kind of attachment, and there's a mature kind of attachment. Just as you've experienced in visiting both Udupi and Simhachalam, although the teachings and the exact expression of the Gaudiya Sampradaya is not the same. There's enormous affection, but there's particular attachment to that particular... That's mature. And what goes on in immature levels is immature. It's not mature.
So when a devotee is preaching, he's preaching on behalf of a particular sampradaya.
But just like Prabhupada was preaching to the Christians, follow Jesus Christ. We don't have to say something different to the followers of the Sri Sampradaya or the followers of Madhvacharya. Follow what Madhvacharya taught. And then one can discuss, what did Madhvacharya teach? We've had this discussion, like Gopi's visit to... And there's different ways of approaching. It is valuable that we have a clear understanding of what is the next word is important, the unique feature of our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. What is that gift that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very, very, very magnanimously was giving? And the manner in which he gave it is related to the gift that he was giving. He gave a very special kind of love for Krishna. He gave access to that. He was tasting it and he gave access to it to others. The love that the residents of Vraja have for Krishna, which is very, very, very special and unique. And he made it readily available. And that's something very, very, very wonderful. So while we're spending time, if the occasion comes to spend time with some mature practitioners of other religions, while we can deeply appreciate their faith and their realizations, that doesn't mean we abdicate what is very wonderful and unique and special about what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu shared that with Venkatabhata, wasn't it with the purpose of conversion, but relishing. And sharing in a transcendental way. Anything else? You've been a quiet group this time. I wonder why that is. Have you noticed? They're always
it's
like this.
Not.
some places, and even in the course of this visit, Mike, I'll just share this with you. Mike's time, everyone's kind of like formal and kind of frozen, brain frozen, nervous or whatever it is. But after some time, this interaction, questions, and it starts to not just become more relaxed, but become more participatory, interactive. And generally, my experience here is it's less kind of the initial time that I spend is a little bit less reserved and just kind of trying to figure it out, I guess. Much more participatory compared to other places. I would guess in part because you're already engaged in nice katha and you're in the mood of interactive. But that's not happened this time. Okay. I'm just giving you some feedback. I'm not like... Okay. See the Prabhupada key? Yeah.